Hey guys, welcome to King Arthur and Myopia Movies. This week we're watching King Arthur on Myopia Movies. Hey, look at that. In the meantime, I want to thank you guys for supporting us, listening, supporting, listening, reviewing, listening. And also reviewing and sharing and social networking on Facebook and Twitter and Letterboxd and all those places. In the meantime, please join the Patreon if you want to give us money and get extra content for that. And honestly, Matt wanted to do this movie forever. We're glad we got to finally indulge him and watch this very bizarre Clive Owen movie. So, thanks. Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we visit Clive Owen in the second worst rated King Arthur movie. Don't worry, guys. We're not going to ever do that 2017 one directed by Guy Ritchie.
I would rather watch that one again.
Really?
Yes.
Ooh. Oh, God help us all. How about this? Once again, Clive Owen doesn't invite his mother to a premiere. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia and riffer on Center Profit on panel we've got.
Matthew W. Quinn, if you like historical fantasy, you should check out Battle for the Wastelands, my book, and watch this once.
Wait, you have history in your book?
It's based on stuff. We'll get to that later.
And I'm Jeremy.
Hi.
Hey.
It's good to have most of the regular crew back together again. We've had a lot of guests in the last couple months.
Daniel is locked in the trunk of my car. He annoyed me too much.
That's right. Hey, he doesn't matter. He's fine. Anyway, so, you know, despite the fact that Sudsy is out in the cold on this cold, cold December Eve, we're here to talk about 2004. In what actually is a pretty stacked cast. I was surprised at how many people I recognized in this movie that I had barely remembered. I saw this in theaters. Anyone else?
I did.
Yep. Yeah, and what did you think in theaters? When you left the theater in 2004, you were probably, what, just graduating college?
Yeah, that was my last year. Yeah.
So what did you think as a filmic person?
I didn't think much of it. Yeah, I mean, that sums it up pretty much.
I thought from the trailers, it was going to be such an epic, man.
Yeah.
Oh, God help us. Matt?
I remember liking it. It's just that I also remember that the closest thing they have to the mythology is love triangle between Arthur, Guinevere, and
Lancelot
is a bunch of meaningful stares, and I do remember that even more so now. Now I'm going to turn into Nazi Gandalf. Oh, sorry, King Serdic.
Yeah, so Matt is going to give us our plot synopsis, but if you haven't seen this, this is supposed to be the quote-unquote historically accurate story of Arthur, where he's a Roman something operating in Britannia with first the Celts are against him, and then at some point they join him to fight off the Saxons, right?
Yeah, so it's based on the theory that the legends of King Arthur are based on a Roman unit of Sarmatians, horse people from Central Asia, who were deployed in Britain at one time under the command of a guy named Lucius Artorius Castus.
Uh-huh.
And so Clive Owen's character is supposed to be like his grandson or something.
Right.
And so it's the last days of the Roman Empire. Clive Owen is the commander of a group of Sarmatian cavalry who are all played by, like, British people. And they're supposed to be given their freedom after 15 years of military service, but St. Germanus, who is a Catholic leader who was a Roman officer at one point, basically wants him to go on one last mission before he'll give them their walking papers, which I could swear this is sort of commentary on the Iraq War stop loss. And they have to go rescue a Roman landowner living north of the wall for some reason from the invading Saxons who are landing in the completely wrong place, led by Stellan Skarsgård playing what I call medieval Nazi Gandalf. And mayhem
well,
ensues.
Well, I would say, you know, Hitler had more charisma, but
I mean, at least he could give a rousing speech.
Yeah.
Scene one, in voiceover, we literally get, by 300 AD, and then you realize we're in a bad shit show. And they couldn't even hire, like, John Larroquette Stone to give us our intro. That's for Jeremy, apparently.
Yeah.
The Roman Empire extended from Arabia to Britain, but they wanted more. More land, more peoples loyal and subservient to Rome, but no people so important as the powerful Sarmatians to the east. Thousands died on that field, and when the smoke cleared on the fourth day, only the Sarmatian soldiers left alive were members of the decimated but legendary cavalry. The Romans, impressed by their bravery and horsemanship, spared their lives. On screen, 452
AD. Holy crap, this movie is pretentious. Right? And then, like, at that point, they're like, they're kidnapping Lancelot, right?
Yeah, part of the deal was the Sarmatians would send some of their children to be horsemen for the Romans, like, for forever. And they're all shouting the battle cry of Rus, which is a completely different ethnic group that didn't even exist for a few hundred years. Like, the fact they try and get some of the history right means the stuff they do get wrong, like, it's set in the right time period as the historical Arthur would have lived, but the rest of it is so bad, it's even more noticeable for it.
Yeah, this movie thinks it's doing something. And, I mean, Jeremy and I have already talked a little bit about, like, Anton Fuqua, which we should do on mic. But, like, he is nothing if not a pretentious director. Like, he is trying to say something, and God help us. But, like, okay, so this is supposed to be the story of King Arthur. The first person, of course, we're introduced to is Lancelot, for some reason. But, like, all this is a huge mess.
Yeah, they could have had the flashback we see later with Arthur as a child and begun the movie that way.
Right.
That would have been interesting.
I mean, they could have done a lot of things, which feels weird saying because this has been told 30 fucking times already, and most of them have been better than this.
Well, this and that King Arthur 2017 one we're never going to do, that at least both of them, they try and set it in the post-Roman period
that
instead of
worse.
Fake Middle Ages.
Every sense of, because, like, this is so fucking boring. And further, I mean, we can just get this out in the open. Nothing happens in this movie, and then there's a 20-minute battle scene at the end. This is such a... Like, this reminds me of that 13th Warrior movie we did earlier this season for Patreon, I believe, only. But, like, they're trying to do something. And I'm sure if you're Clive Owen and your career has always been swings and misses, you're like, I'm going to be the first king of England. Oh, boy. And it just you're just wetting that fart, man. This is just nothing. Nothing! And I mean, I agree with Matt's fundamental argument here, which is pick something. Mm-hmm. Make it historically accurate or not. And if you're going to make it historically accurate, just hire the fun Monty Python guy. Do it as a documentary or make a movie. This tries to do both. You can't do both. This is really weird. All of this is weird.
Yeah.
So Matt, take us through the plot. Let's just do it step by step.
Okay, so you see the Arthur and his, what they keep calling knights, even though knights is a term from much later, they probably call them equites or something,
yep,
are escorting what's supposed to be a Roman bishop to the Hadrian's Wall.
Right.
And they get attacked by Wodes, which are Celtic guerrillas. Wode is kind of like calling your enemy like a kraut,
right,
kind of soldier slang for them. And
you
they
said it, not me, you're fine.
And they escort the bishop. So the guy in the carriage, it turns out, isn't the bishop. He gets killed. The actual bishop is with the soldiers because apparently he was in the military at one point.
Yep.
And he, never mind that they make the ancient, the late Western Empire sound like it was a Catholic theocracy when the Pope was still under the Emperor's leash at that point. So we have a bishop giving orders to soldiers, which is a problem. And they're supposed to be freed from their 15 years of service. But no, they have to go north of Hadrian's Wall to rescue the Pope's favorite godson, who will be the future Pope, basically a really kind of annoying Italian teenager and his even worse dad.
Yep.
And so even though Arthur is very upset with him, this man is still the boss, so he's got to do it. And he basically asks God, if anyone has to die, let it be him and not his men, because this is a screw job.
Yeah. Okay.
And so off they go.
And, I mean, so... I don't even know how to tackle this movie, because it's just such a, like, an utter mess.
If they hadn't gotten so much historical stuff wrong, I would have probably liked it a lot better. Like, they could have just had a Roman general giving the order, and it's pretty obvious he's doing it as a political favor for somebody.
Yeah.
Rather than making the late Rome sound like, you know, he talks about there being a papal army. No, there was not a papal army, not at this point.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's... And then he really seems to love Pelagius, but gets a lot about Pelagius wrong. I mean, beware. This is going to be like Revenge of the Sith level Matt rage here.
Okay, so I guess what we should talk about a little bit. It's directed by a guy named Antoine Fuqua. And I don't know why I'm having such a hard time with his name this time. But he's known for directing music videos by Coolio. And, of course, he won the Academy Award, I believe, for Training Day.
No, Denzel did, but...
But, okay, so it won Academy Awards.
Yeah.
Wait, didn't he win for Glory, too?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Denzel Washington needs to be in more movies.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a statement. Hollywood should not make another Robin Hood movie, King Arthur movie, or what else we got?
Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes movie for 30 years. Just let it die. It's been too long.
Make a King Arthur movie with Denzel Washington in it. He's like a Roman legionary from somewhere else.
Okay, you're allowed to do it if you can do variations on a theme. If you made a stand-like apocalyptic movie around King Arthur looking for the Holy Grail in the modern era, and it could be like Cyberpunk 2077, you know, with just dildos appearing for no reason.
You mean they release it too early?
Most Hollywood movies are released before they're done.
That's true.
Like, ask any visual effects artist. You know, movies aren't completed, they're just released.
This is Jeremy and my regular plug for Corridor Crew.
Yeah.
one of the best things that exist in the world today.
Yep.
Them and Binging with Babish could just, if they could just run the world, I'd be happy. So we have this whole mess. I mean, Train Day is fine. He also did, most recently, Magnificent Seven, Equalizer. Olympus Has Fallen. Oh, garbage.
Yeah.
Oh, garbage.
I've got Olympus Has Fallen on my next Netflix list, but I haven't watched it yet.
The sequels are fine because they understand how stupid they are.
Yes.
Like, Olympus Has Fallen takes, like this movie, takes itself so seriously, and that's its biggest downfall. It's, you're just like, oh, there's nothing to this. It's just everyone being so serious and sad. And
well, Bors is hilarious. I loved Bors.
Well, and
the guy who's got like 20 kids and doesn't know their names.
And is not married to the wife and all this stuff. And that's what, I mean, that's his last line. He goes, great, now she's going to want me to marry you. And she goes, what makes you think I'd take it? Because whenever there's funny, they turn into Monty Python characters. I mean, but like, this is also like a movie that is super religious somehow. Like, Clive Owen is like praying at like at weird intervals. And tragically, Jeremy and I watched the director's cut, and that movie, my God, that's 20 extra minutes.
Yeah. That's probably why I thought it was so boring. I saw the theatrical release.
Yeah, and it just moves at a clip, I'm sure.
It's tighter and more entertaining, but
I don't think more entertaining. It's got the literally like 10 of those extra minutes are in the final battle scene.
Yeah, I mean,
the last battle scene takes like 35 minutes in our cut.
Yeah, and I just didn't care about any of it.
No, I could not be bothered. Because it literally starts with Arthur just prancing around on his horse, like just back and forth for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then like, you're like, someone worth tasting. And you're just like, wait, what? Mads Mikkelsen should just be drinking this blood. I know I'm combining him with when he's in Hannibal, but you know what? It's a better movie if he's also kind of a cannibal, I guess. So how does Merlin... Okay, introduce us to Merlin. Man.
Okay, Merlin
apparently is... Apparently this is all on you tonight.
Yeah, Merlin is the leader of a group of Celtic guerrillas who are fighting the Romans. He's like a kind of a druid figure.
Yeah.
And...
Funny, he doesn't look Jewish.
And I'm convinced Guinevere is his daughter. We'll get to her later. And I'm convinced he is trying to hook them up. It's a honey trap.
Honeypot.
Yeah. So because he wants Arthur to help fight for Britain when the Romans have left and the Saxons are coming in, because the Saxons show up right after our unlucky Romans are sent on their last mission, led by a Saxon king who is so racist he doesn't even want his soldiers to rape Roman women because that would pollute their bloodlines. And he sounds like he's been smoking too much.
Oh, our hero, ladies and gentlemen. I will talk about three things just very quickly. This is an ugly movie. It's dirty. It's gross. There's a filter over everything, except for the night scenes, which at least they filmed at night. And everything is green, yellow because of how they film it. It is nonsense. And I get it. You want to make it real and gritty. And people were real and gritty back then because they were real and gritty. And it's, you know, 1,500 years ago. But this movie... I mean, come on, man. Like, I just want someone I can like. And even Clive Owen at the end is just such an asshole. He's an asshole to everyone. Oh, God! Why didn't you take me instead? It's a Shakespearean nonsense soliloquy. This is all garbage. Garbage!
I liked him.
I'm sure you did.
I mean, the whole point of this is he's, which I could have probably handled better, is that he's slowly losing faith in Rome. That's why when the Romans leave, he stays behind.
He's losing faith in Rome, but not in God, which, I mean, I get, I guess. But, like, the whole thing is that he doesn't care that the other people are heathens or pagans or whatever the bishop calls them. He is an equal opportunity person, which is a very modern idea, and I appreciate it. But they don't explore any of it. They just give him a character trait, which is like, I'm with Jesus. And then he walks back. Like, and again, like, that's something that, what is that Robin Hood movie, Prince of Thieves, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're like, you have a badass Morgan Freeman as like a Muslim character, and he gets to talk about being Muslim. But here it's all about like, I'm almost Catholic.
Well, they do touch on they do touch a little bit on Pelagius and Augustine and get it wrong.
They got it wrong!
I mean,
don't defend us. You just said they got it wrong. I don't know, man. Like, okay, so this is a mess. Describe for me the Celts. And because, like, we're first introduced to Merlin as though he is the leader of this, like, rebel force of Celts, right? And he's on a hillside with his face painted like a Smurf, because that's what the Celts did do. As we learned from Academy Award winning documentary Braveheart, right? Academy Award winning anti-Semitic documentary Braveheart. And like the blue paint that looks good. And again, nothing against the actors here, because Stellar Skateboard and Keira Knightley are rocking it. They're doing a great job. It's just that their dialogue is nothing.
Yeah, the Guinevere's attempt to flirt with Arthur is basically haranguing him about politics.
Nothing gets me harder.
And guilt trips. And so eventually they make it out to the Roman outpost at Hadrian's Wall, and you see basically the Roman landlord is a complete jackass who is convinced everyone that he speaks for God, and he's tyrannizing everyone, and he's got a bunch of woad prisoners walled up alive in his basement with a couple of priests to convert them before they all starve to death.
Yeah, and he's like, this is not Jesus or whatever, and then they free him, which is pretty good.
And Clive Owen, this is when he starts to realize how sinful even Christian Rome is, when he realizes what they're doing. And then the Saxons, complete with their ominous drums, start showing up, and he decides he's going to evacuate all the peasants, mm-hmm. not just the douchebag and his son. And the Saxons end up catching up with them, and they have the battle on the ice, which is actually pretty fun.
Yeah, that's pretty much like the only decent part of this whole movie.
Because you see, Guinevere and Lancelot get to be smart aleck, and Arthur is kind of clever. He's like, get the Saxons to bunch up on the ice so they break through it.
Yeah.
And Dagonet goes out like a boss. He's one of the lesser Sarmatians. Like, Bors has a personality because he's got like 20 kids. Lancelot is a smart aleck who's kind of Arthur's right-hand guy. The others all kind of run together. And crossbows that have a problem, they're too short-ranged.
They are like 100, 200 years ahead of their time here.
I think,
especially the one that kills Lancelot.
I think, but there were crossbows at one point, but would the Saxons have had them?
Oh, absolutely not. I'm just saying, like, this is all like, here's why I hate steampunk nonsense. Like, this is steampunk nonsense.
Yeah, and they're on their way back to Hadrian's Wall, which the Saxons are landing what's now Scotland rather than down along the coast, which what is called the Saxon Shore. Oopsies. Right. And Guinevere decides just to go for a nice long walk, and Arthur follows after her, and there's Merlin. And there we get some backstory involving his father being a Roman officer and his mother being a Briton, and his mother was killed in one of their raids, and so he hates them. And they have like their own version of pulling the sword from the stone.
Yep.
And I guess, again, Merlin just happens to be there to try and hook up his daughter with Arthur, which is why I think this was all set up from the beginning. And meanwhile, they arrive at the wall just ahead of the Saxons. And Alecto, the douchebag's son, the douchebag has since eaten an arrow at this point, tells Arthur that Pelagius, who's basically his foster father, was executed for heresy. So basically, it's more, let's disillusion Arthur some more.
How you doing there, Jeremy?
I
See, that's why I wanted Matt to lead this episode. Like, because I have... I picked up on so little of this. I mean, again, you and I watched a 2-hour, 21-minute version, mm-hmm. and I was, like, baffled. Like, none of the decisions Arthur makes make any sense whatsoever. Right? Like, okay, so he's pissed off that the bishop, like, that he's being dicked over by Rome, and that, like, there's a real asshole, like, member of the Catholic Church who needs to be rescued, and at this point, of course, in Rome, the Catholic Church is a big deal. But we, since we're told the year, and the year is, like, way too late for any of this to make sense, it's 438, right? Whatever, it's 430-something. At this point, the Roman Empire, 452, the Senate has already met for the last time. At this point, we've already had a king from the Goths, right? Like, there's nothing going on here. And the Roman Empire has no power. And this is...
Yeah, the Romans are pulling out. This is like the last helicopters out of Saigon.
Oh, Vietnam. And if there's one thing I've learned about American diplomacy, you never pull out. You just keep pounding it until it's a disappointment. That's a Carlin joke.
Well, I think the idea is that he's getting more and more disillusioned with Rome, and Guinevere is jumping his bones. Like, she just basically comes in and climbs on top of him to get him to stay behind to fight the Saxons. This is all a plan.
That's right. So, when does Merlin turn from an enemy into a friend?
Probably around the time Arthur has a chance to kill him and doesn't.
Yeah, but why? Why doesn't he kill Merlin? Do we know? Because, like, I was watching the movie and I was literally confused by this. Because the first half of the movie, Arthur is seeing, like, that's an old wizard Merlin he is. And he's there trying to protect something, something, something. And he's like an evil wizard king man, right? And we don't see any magic this time. So calling him a wizard feels more like a racial slur. But, and then eventually, like, they're fighting on the same side because Arthur doesn't kill him. I don't know why. I have no idea why.
I'm not sure if this is I'm not sure if Arthur has found out Pelagius has been murdered yet. So maybe he's already starting to doubt Rome, which means he's already maybe not going to kill the leader of the Woads.
Ah, the Woads.
I mean, the concept is sound. I just don't think it was executed very well.
Gotcha.
You know, if this is his arc, his disillusionment with Rome, and why he decides to stay behind and fight for the people who are his enemies.
And again, like, And this is exactly what that beautiful man across the table from me said. This movie is too complicated, man. Like, why do we need 6 extra plots? Why do we need him to, like, woo the Woads or the Celts? Why don't we just have him fight the Saxons, man? Like, that Saxon son is a piece of shit. He's a great villain. The Saxon dad is even better. Like, make it like any video game movie where, yeah, the Saxon son is the first villain. Like, he's the Bond henchman, man. And, like, at the end, King Arthur's going to kill the dad first, and then he has to deal with the angry son. And pow, you got a movie. And you know what that movie is? Entertaining. This is all Shakespearean soliloquy where you're just like, oh, King Arthur, you shall one day be the king.
Well, they were going for character development, just didn't pan out. Of course, your version of the movie is also longer, so maybe they just had a bunch of lard in there.
No, I mean, like, re-watching the version Jeremy and I watched, I didn't feel like it was that different.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's been over 15 years since the original came out, but I couldn't tell what had been added. It all sort of blended together.
I just remember reading somewhere there was a different ending. It sounds like there wasn't.
No, I mean, it ends with the wedding. I will say, so the last battle of this is the Battle of Badon Hill, right?
Which is fought not on a hill at all.
No.
Although,
Prancibald is walking along a hill a bunch.
Well, there is a hill where you see Arthur is in his full regalia with the standard riding along.
He is.
So there is a hill. So maybe I was being a little uncharitable in my Twitter rant.
I will say, the way Monty Python deals with this is the following. Sir Bedivere the Wise was the first to become one of King Arthur's knights. But other illustrious names were soon to follow. Sir Lancelot, the brave. Sir Galahad, the pure. Sir Robin, the not so quite as brave as Sir Lancelot, who had nearly fought the Dragon of Angnor, who had nearly stood up to the vicious Chicken of Bristol, and who had personally wet himself at the Battle of Badon Hill. Done!
Yeah, Sir Lancelot, who is set up as being the kind of man who goes after other men's women. Like, he keeps claiming one of Boar's kids is his.
That's true.
And then he does some other stuff as well. So the idea that he'd go after Guinevere would be in character.
Well, and that's also the Mort d'Arthur, right? Like, yeah. Eventually he's banging Guinevere in bed with Arthur, which makes him a cuck, which means that the Republican right doesn't like him very much.
You've been watching Mists of Avalon.
Publicly.
You've been watching The Mists of Avalon, haven't you?
No, that's literally the book. I've read The Mort d'Arthur. You know, I mean, it's hot. I mean, for, you know, like late medieval pornography. But, you know, it needs a little upping. And since Pornhub has removed 85% of their content, you know, I see a potential future.
Including maybe a pirated version of this movie.
I mean, it's entirely possible. So, like, you know, that company who made, what was it called? Pirates? Like, the most expensive pornography of all time?
This is what happens.
They could do a version of the Arthurian legend.
Well, I mean,
Monty Python and the Search for the Holy Codpiece?
Yeah, so... the Saxons take... This is where things start breaking down. I'm the one who reads military books.
By the way, it would be the Anglo-Saxons in this version.
Yeah, well, so the Saxon king sends one wave of his army to take through into what's obviously a trap because he keeps his son back and lets a quarter of his army get destroyed for no reason I can tell.
Yeah, the son he's given shit to the whole movie suddenly says, hey, stay back with me.
Well, he's his son, even if he's mad at him.
Yeah.
I mean, that relationship we should get into because it makes zero sense this entire time.
Is there a scene where he offers to let his father kill him and his father just wounds him instead?
Yeah.
Because that was in the director's cut but wasn't in mine. Except you do see he's got a facial scar for some reason later.
Yeah, that's in our version. And like the dad asks him to stand up and he doesn't. And he gets the wound across his face. And it's a lot of nonsense. Don't worry, there's still more nonsense to be had.
Well, he was mouthing off at his dad earlier, and then his dad is like, you better challenge me with a sword in your hand, because as long as I live, I rule, and you'll hold your tongue.
Why do they all have different armor? That bothered the fuck out of
me. Saxons are
barbarian. No, the Knights of the Round Table.
Well, it's only at the very end where they actually look like Central Asians, like they have the right armor. But why?
Why? They're all Roman officers.
Well, the Romans picked them because the Romans did not really have good cavalry, so they got it from other people.
Yeah, but Arthur is in Roman armor. Why are the rest of them dressed up like they're... Like, it almost feels racist. I mean, this is like the conqueror-level nonsense.
Well, the Sarmatians were Iranian, so they would be more European than Asian, maybe.
Fine, but they don't look pearly white. Dark hair. Just because you speak with an English accent doesn't mean you get to be every race on the planet. And this is particularly noticeable here because he's like, oh, I'm dressed like a Mongol. I am. And you're just like, all right, buddy. And if that Mads Mikkelsen, who does it, you know, the best he can with what he's got, is fighting with a scimitar at one point.
Yeah, because most of the time in the movie, they don't seem that really Central Asian in their armor or tactics. But in the final battle, they got full-on Turkic stuff on, scimitars, firing mounted archers, which makes them so dangerous in the first place.
And not King Arthur. This is only the other men, including Lancelot, the one with the French name. You know, French name.
And all the others, if they're Iranian, but they all have Welsh names.
Yeah, this is, again, all nonsense. Pick something. Pick anything. This is a movie that sidles two decisions constantly, and so all it feels like is utter nonsense to me. That's why Monty Python works. That's why, hell, a lot of things work. I just, this movie to me feels such a wet fart. You know what's even better? We haven't done it yet. But the Sword in the Stone by Disney, because it just picks the first half of the Once and Future King. That's it. He turns into a squirrel at one fucking point. You know what King Arthur doesn't do? He doesn't turn into a fucking squirrel. This movie could have used more squirrel play, because that other squirrel, sexy squirrel. They gave that squirrel boobs. I don't know why, but Disney, I mean, Tim Burton could have drawn them boobs. Disney was a weird place in the 70s. That is the end of my rant. I have nothing other to add.
And so they fight for Hadrian's Wall, and the roads somehow have trebuchets.
Did you realize Hadrian's Wall had a gate for some reason?
Well, it would have had a gate, you know, trade and stuff. But why do the Celts have trebuchets? Why? This is for you, radio audience, because I don't expect anyone here to know, because that's the level.
You know what would have been a great scene? Arthur teaching them how to do that shit. Because that's something the Romans would have had, right?
Yeah, or something. Yeah, but then that'd make the movie even longer. I mean, this is something that could have been, should have been either Lord of the Rings or shorter. So I saw the theatrical release and I thought it was tolerable. It sounds like our two other esteemed gentlemen saw the long version.
Yeah, and it's just more of the same thing, which just serves only to stretch it out when that's not what this movie needs to be doing.
Yeah, because, you know, the fall of Roman Britain, or at least, you know, the holding, preventing the fall of Roman Britain for a generation, that could be Lord of the Rings epic level. Either go big or go home. They kind of didn't either, at least for the director's cut. The theatrical release was tighter, but
yeah,
I didn't think it was boring. I thought it was just got a lot of stuff wrong. We didn't have to.
Yeah. I mean, coming from someone who doesn't know all of the history behind this, even just as a film, it's boring. It's bland. It's
well, and to be blunt about Matt, you're right. It gets a lot wrong that it didn't have to get wrong, and that's the problem, right? Like, because that's Jeremy's point, too, right? If you want to make a historically accurate film, you could have done it. Or you could just tell a story, which the thing is, if there was a real King Arthur, he was probably a Welsh guy, or, like you said, a Sarmatian, or a but you, there's a story you could tell that could have been historically accurate. Instead, you chose to do neither. So the movie is just like, it's like halfway to thinking it's like filming a Shakespeare. Like, and you don't need to do that either. Just make a movie. Movies are things that have existed for a long time. You know what's like...
Well, this is a movie. It's a movie that's iffy.
Do like an Anthony and Cleopatra. Do like, you know, like... Do something with Liz Taylor. Like, that's a movie. That if you want to do Swords and Sandals, you could have. But instead, you just get this, like, I'm a mopey King Arthur, and I'm going to walk around in a tunic, and then my armor shows up, and that means I'm talking business. There's so much stuff. Like, at one point, they're in a medieval castle, and he's like, I have to help the peasants for some reason. No, you don't. And you know what's going to happen? Half your knights are going to get wounded and nearly die. That's on you, Arthur. You could have just left.
And then the Saxons would have killed like 200 people.
Who cares?
He did.
No, he was supposed to pledge himself to his knights. And instead, he doesn't, and two of them die. That's his fault. And he feels bad about it. Oh, the heavens, God, you were supposed to take me! That is a Shakespearean nonsense speech for no reason. Right?
Yeah.
You know what he could have done then? He could have said, God, my morals have changed. I'm here to protect those people from the Saxons. But he doesn't do that either. It's a movie where they want it both ways. And then he rends his garments like he's Tevye. Yeah. And he's like, God help me. Like, I don't know. Like, here's the thing. They want the character to have a moral center. But that moral center keeps shifting. Which means, I don't care. Right? Like, if the whole thing was to protect his Knights of the Round Table. And there are seats that are vacant because other men have died and I carry their scars with me. Which is how we're introduced to the Round Table. It would matter more if he didn't constantly be willing to sacrifice their lives. For no reason.
No reason like saving 200 peasants from being murdered?
But why does he care about them? Like, no, like honestly, like what well, reason?
We probably saw the Roman guy abusing them in the name of God and felt guilty.
But he beat the shit out of him for that. We have the, at least in the extended version, we have the scene where he like throws the guy off his horse and says, you do not treat them, right?
Yeah,
like,
well, I think there's some whooping in this one too.
Well, good. But if that's the thing, like, why doesn't he just help them escape? He doesn't have to fight the Saxons, an entire army of people. Or he should have sacrificed only himself, which is, I know, what he starts to do. But, like, then the horses change because they can hear the war drums. And that scene's also pretty stupid. Because I guess it means that Merlin actually does have magic, which we otherwise never see in this.
Well, the war drums are pretty cool. What I had a problem with is they're fighting the Saxons on the ice in winter. 2 days ride later, it's
the
ice wall.
Is going to... Sorry.
2 days ride later, it's the summer. Britain's got weird weather. It's not that weird.
It's true. That's true. But yeah, I mean, we can talk about the end of this. What do you guys think of Keira Knightley in this?
She's probably the most energetic person in the movie.
She is, 100%.
And that's... Yeah, I mean, her first lines of dialogue, I mean, she doesn't speak for the first 5 minutes because she's like mostly unconscious. But when she does, she's basically giving Arthur shit. And I'm like, this is great.
Yes. Agreed. You get to talk about your favorite character, Bors.
Bors is one of the Sarmatians, except he has a Welsh name. And he's got like 20 children that he doesn't know their names.
Yeah.
He has numbers. His girlfriend with the baby cannot possibly be the mother to all of them. She's too young. And he's kind of like, she wants us to get married and give the children names.
No, I thought
he was funny because he's just...
No, I like him. I'm giving you... You don't have to apologize. I think he's a fun character. If there were... If say, Lancelot had any personality other than an erection, or who's the pretty one? Galahad?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, if he had any personality other than being pretty...
Yeah, they... Yeah,
Bors they develop. Bors they give life.
Yeah, let's see. Arthur is the religious idealist who breaks. Lancelot is the horn dog who goes after other men's women and is jealous and is, like, not really necessarily jealous, but he's very devoted. Arthur is, like, his right hand. Bors is the guy with 20 kids.
Yeah.
Those are the only ones I can really tell. It's better than 13th Warrior. I'll give him that. 13th Warrior don't really develop any of the Vikings at all.
This movie definitely doesn't follow the rule of show don't tell.
Oh, they
I mean, the pretty much the only time where someone does something that shows their character is when the guy is, you know, runs out to break the ice. Like, you know, they're facing down hundreds of Saxons, but this dude's like, fuck it, I'm going to do what needs to be done, and runs out by himself.
Leroy Jenkins.
Yeah, to like risk his own life to break the ice. And I'm like, that guy suddenly became a badass because he, you know, did something characteristic.
Better or worse movie if they get Excalibur?
They wouldn't have done anything with it.
That's true. It would have just been like here's a slightly nicer sword.
Yeah, that's all it would have been.
Merlin would have had it. It's like, this is the official sword of the Celts. You know, you see that Celt stuff on it? That's nice. Oh, God.
Yeah, like Merlin had no point in this. Like, he literally stands in place for most of the movie.
And at one point he goes, ah! And then they fire the catapults or the trebuchets.
Yeah.
That's something. I don't know how they pitched this. I guess they pitched it on the Battle of Badon Hill. Clive Owen in the Battle of Badon Hill.
Like, my thing is, you know, this came out 4 years after Gladiator.
Oh, and this is Gladiator and a half, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, before 2000, how many, you know, medieval sword and sandal epics were there? Not like since the 60s. Well, but after this, you get King Arthur, you get Troy, you get Alexander. Some other stuff. Alexander. Yeah, those were the three big ones that were like, hey, Gladiator was a hit.
And they all lost money.
Yeah.
Except for Gladiator, which is, it's not great, but it's fine.
This could have been, you know, this could have been a trilogy.
Okay. I'm a Hollywood producer right now, and I want you to pitch me the second movie.
All right, the third movie would be Badon Hill, and that's when you finally kill Serdic. The second movie, I guess, would be
an erotic adventure of Hercules.
The Saxon Strike Back.
Oh, you mean just this movie could have been three parts?
Yeah, the rise of King Arthur as a trilogy, like Lord of the Rings level. That could have been awesome.
I disagree 100%.
Yeah.
Because this movie already feels laggy and too long.
That was what I was saying. Either go big, which they didn't, or go home, which...
See, I thought you were going to say you tighten this up to 100 minutes, and then the second movie is Arthur asserting himself over, like, the Kingdom of Mercia. Or the Celts turn on him, and he has to try to, like, go north, because, like... Or the third one is just the search for the Holy Grail. I mean, like, I don't know what you got, but, like, this movie is already too long. And I know we watched the director's cut and you didn't.
My point is, it's something, it's like the Dark Tower with, what's his face?
Matthew McConaughey
as Randall Flagg and the gunslinger. That either you make it big or you make it small. You don't make it middling. It's neither fish nor fowl.
I will say, though, this feels like every other Antoine Fuqua movie. Because this is also Training Day, where you're like, this is both too long and too short. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't hate him as much as you do, but I'm mostly okay with his movies. I don't not like them. But this one, I mean, there's a reason why it has a 31% on Rotten Tomatoes. I just don't know what he has. Maybe
he's just... I mean, he has Denzel Washington. I mean, you look at the film.
Denzel should have shown up in this. No, I mean, like, if they're Sarmatians, you could have Africans in it.
Yeah. Well, there's, I think there is a figure from Arthurian lore who is supposed to be black. So you could have, or a Moor of some kind. So you could have him as one of the...
As a Moor. Why not?
One of the legionaries, maybe. Because the cavalry are Sarmatian. The legions could be from... It could be anybody.
They could. And at this point, they were. Right? Like, there were very few Romans that were actually there. Like, they were all Ostrogoths and Visigoths and Vandals. Like they were just incorporating whoever they could into the army. Because Catholicism needed to be protected. I mean, like... Not like they're... Like, Protestants or... I mean... I'm looking at Jeremy, and he's wearing a xenomorph mask, and every time I look away, I'm like, oh, there's another set of teeth.
Should we call him Immortan Joe from Mad Max? I mean, he's got the bald thing going.
Rest in peace, just recently
R.I.P.D.
died.
Yeah, that's right. You know what? You keep mentioning this, so I'm going to bring it up. Next time we do a theme, obviously for December, we did Harry Potter, it went on and on and on. At this point, there are 4 Mad Max movies, and there are... 8 Lord of the Rings movies we have not done yet. Tell us what you want us to do as a series for next year. Because, like, next season, we'll do another series. And I will say, Mad Max Fury Road is one of my favorite movies of all time. Hmm. They should never have ever done the black and white version. Didn't change anything. But hopefully he's going to come back and do another one soon. They've been trying for 5 years now.
I heard they're trying to make a Furiosa movie.
They should! She's a great character. And what's his name? Tom Hardy is a great Mad Max. But whatever.
Yeah, so.
At this point, we're old enough to have not only seen Fellowship of the Rings, but it's going to turn 20 years old next year.
Yep.
Yeah, they can't. I remember, yeah, Fellowship of the Rings, I was in high school. Two Towers, I think, was two. So, yeah.
No, I mean, the first one came out in 2001, and then 2002 and 2003.
So. But yeah, speaking of Lord of the Rings, to round this out, the last battle at Hadrian's Wall, that's one way to resolve a love triangle, is have one of the guys get shot in the chest with a crossbow. But then he throws his sword and kills the guy who did it, you know, taking him with him.
And you got to help me here, Matt. What's the king of the Saxons?
The Saxon king is Cerdic. His son is Cynric. So
Cerdic goes toe-to-toe with Mads Mikkelsen. They have a sword fight in our version that lasts 12 and a half minutes. And at one point, Mads is chopped across the entire body and the neck. His scimitar is dropped. He is going to pull out a dagger, and the king kicks the sword over. And they fight more. And then Mads gets another swipe at him.
It's a fencing match in the middle of a brawl.
It's fine. To your point, though, whenever those fights happen, everyone else disappears, which is weird. And especially at the end... When King Cerdic is fighting Arthur, there's literally no one else on the entire battlefield. I paused it for a second. I was like, this scene is a lot of things, but it almost reminds me of The Longest Day. Like, there's shit happening everywhere. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, in The Longest Day, when, everyone, Fonda, they have guns, there's people in the background, but yeah. Clive Owen is standing against a blue sky. And I'm like, you can go right off and fuck yourself. Because Lancelot dies around 400 men. And when Arthur shows up with his mighty erection, like, no one else is in the frame. It is a weird directing choice here. Like, I'd rather watch Anakin kill some younglings. Like, at least then there's some drama.
Yeah, Cynric kills Lancelot and has killed himself. Cerdic kills What's-His-Face, and that motivates Arthur to, you know, kamikaze on him. And they have a prolonged fight, and I post on Twitter that, you know, medieval Nazi Gandalf gets it in the crotch. It makes sense in context.
And it did make sense in context. I mean, the fight between Arthur and King's, like, Tudyk's or whatever, King Alan Tudyk, was like... funnily enough, it's a shot almost directly out of Gladiator, as you pointed out, where in that final fight in the gladiatorial arena, I realize now we have to do Gladiator, which is a movie I've taught now for on and off a decade, but like Joaquin Phoenix has not only stabbed Russell Crowe in the ribs, but he's literally seeing the Elysian Fields, right? Mm-hmm. But he does the thing where he stabs behind himself. And then Arthur does it like six more times. Kill, like stabbing the king, presumably in the genitals. Because he's on his knees and the king is standing above him. So he's like, diggity, diggity, diggity. And that's where circumcision comes from.
Well, he wanted to make sure there's no more Cynrix.
That's right. That's right. And then the king falls like, whoop. But because we have the two main characters there, the king has no blood coming out of him, which is utter nonsense. Because at this point, I assume, Lancelot has been filled with nothing but squibs. He's that kind of thing you buy at a tourist attraction, which is just like a jelly thing with like fish in it. And because he just explodes with blood. And Mads Mikkelsen, him and Bryan Cranston, to me, in my head, are just like working man's actors. Because he's just like, all right, I'll do your terrible movie, and I'm going to die, right? Like, him and Sean Bean are just like, we're dying? We're dying? Okay, fine, fine, fine. Just like an extra $500,000. Because he super dies. Mads, like, just super, super dies. He takes off his helmet. Why would you take off your helmet unless you were going to super die? And then the Battle of Bane Hills won, I guess, sort of. Because every Saxon is dead, and that's why we don't speak English or Anglo-Saxon.
There's more where they came from.
IKEA came over with a bridge that you had to screw together with like an Allen wrench, and that's how the war was won.
Yeah, and so then they end up getting married at Stonehenge, or at least some other, you know, Arthur and Guinevere.
Well, first of all, it's another henge, because Stonehenge is not literally on the ocean.
Yeah, good point. Or some other Celtic standing stone thing with some ceremony involving wine. Is that a Catholic thing?
It's a very much a Catholic thing. 100% a Catholic thing. Because, you know, the Eucharist exists. Just like Jesus wanted. And also the Jews wanted. I mean, let's be honest. There's wine in everything in, you know, real religions. But, like, it's also like, but what if Stonehenge is more picturesque by being on like, a cliff? Unlike the White Cliffs of Dover, perhaps. And so they just move Stonehenge because of peasants. And then he goes, you know, our kingdoms are together, King Arthur. And he goes, wah! And everyone goes, hooray! And then, you know, somehow the Crimson Tide wins the championship. And that's a sports ball reference for those people who don't believe in the metric system.
Go sports ball team.
That's right. Matt, what's your final judgment?
Again, it's probably one of those see once and don't think about it movies, especially see the shorter version, because it doesn't seem like the director's cut really adds much to it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So, Jeremy?
Just watch Excalibur, watch Monty Python and the Holy Grail. That's all you need.
I will agree with Jeremy. I don't need to watch this again. I never will watch this again. If you haven't seen it, don't watch it. Unless... like Agent Scully in the X-Files, you want to do a dissection to see what happened to Clive Owen's career. Because I love the man. I like him. But other than Children of Men, he's made so many bad decisions. I like his agent should be shot out of a cannon into the sun. Because the man is charismatic, he's charming, and one day he will not be Bond again, because Idris Elba should be. But I will say... he's pretty good in this. Keira Knightley is pretty good in this. They're like, it's weird to watch a movie where elements that I like are drowning in mediocrity. But this movie is a perfect example of that problem.
A good concept. It wasn't executed very well, I don't think, even if it is fun in places.
And with that understanding, thanks for joining us. Happy New Year. Welcome to the new year, 2021, where, God help us, Biden is president, vaccine exists, and one day I'll be able to look at Jeremy's beautiful mouth without a mask on it. Matt, thanks for presenting this, because you've wanted this movie here since we started the show, effectively.
And now I can die happy.
You can die happy. And we've arranged that for you with a special guest, the Grim Reaper. So stay tuned next week.
Are you sure that's not Daniel who escaped from the trunk of my car?
So stay tuned next week and every future week when we put Matthew's death on trial. Thanks, guys.
My Opium Movies is a production of Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. The theme song is Sheriff Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find his music on comtech.com. It is registered under the Creative 4 license. Our regular panelists are Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, Nick Hoffman, and Jeremy Reigel. Thanks for listening. Please support our Patreon at patreon.com/myopia. Thanks, guys.